My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Growing up in the 1950s, I had a sense of being different from many of my friends and classmates. I was often the outsider and would rather be off in a quiet place than in a noisy, busy room. Some teachers labeled me sensitive, and that sensitivity extended to knowing how others felt without them expressing it. I felt their pain, their anger, their confusion, and also their joy. I became the friend that others relied upon when they needed a compassionate listener. Although it felt good to help others feel better about themselves, it often left me drained and tired. It wasn't until my late 30s that I came to understand that I was an empath and learned how to be of service to others while maintaining my own energy balance. Being an empath in everyday life can be a blessing when we learn how to balance this gift and our needs with the needs of others. My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, my friend Raven Digitalis, is also a lifelong empath who has dedicated much of his life to learning the tools of the balanced empath and sharing them with others. Raven is a neo-pagan priest and co-founder of an Eastern Hellenistic nonprofit multicultural temple called Opus Ima Obscure, or OAO. Trained in Eastern philosophies and Georgian witchcraft, Raven has been an Earth-based practitioner since 1999, a priest since 2003, and a Freemason since 2012. He's the author of Esoteric Empathy, Shadow Magic Compendium, Planetary Spells and Rituals, and Gothcraft. His website is ravendigitalis.com, and he joins me this week to discuss his new book, The Everyday Empath, Achieve Energetic Balance in Your Life. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Raven Digitalis. Welcome, Raven.
Hello, it's great to be here again. I think it's been a few years since we chatted.
I think 2014 was the last time we spoke together when your book
came
out.
Time sure flies. That's amazing.
Absolutely. Now, for our listeners meeting you for the first time, and there are going to be many, please share your early life and how you came to understand that you were an empath.
Hello, listeners. Thanks for tuning into Victor's program. It is a wonderful program. Hope everybody has a good day or night. And many people listening probably are familiar with empathy to one degree or another. My new book, The Everyday Empath, is designed specifically for people who believe they might be empaths, or what could be termed empaths, which are people who have their emotional sensitivity turned on high more than the majority of people, really. And so just like any other term, empath is self-referential. It can be a very empowering term. And I didn't know what that term meant for the longest time. I went through my high school days with a lot of, high school days, you could really call it that, not understanding what was happening emotionally and energetically at that time. There's one time that stood out in particular, which is when I was having a really rough day in high school, about 16 years old, and I had just been absorbing so much energy, emotional energy from other people, and coupled with my own hormonal changes at the time, it was just too much, and I didn't really understand what was going on. So kind of had a nervous breakdown on that fateful day and left high school early. I was a very good student, so I wouldn't normally just cut class, but I just couldn't handle it at the time. And I was lucky enough to have a spiritual teacher down the road from the high school whose house I went to, and she happened to be home. And she said, "Well, you're clearly an empath." And I said, "What's that? Never heard of an empath before." And she described empaths as individuals who are extremely emotionally open and absorb emotional energy from other people, from situations, from animals, from environments. And it made perfect sense. And she taught me some techniques to help with that. And it's really been a journey ever since. And I just feel so much pleasure in being able to share that journey and the tools I found along the way, because people who are very empathic can often get very depressed and anxious and suicidal and very dark things, because it's so much to take onto oneself that we need to learn those self-care techniques, as well as the science of empathy, why it is, how it is, how it works, and what we can do about it and what our place is in the world.
Were you one of those kids, like so many of us, that just knew there was a different path for you?
Always. I mean, even when I was young, my parents tried to get me into sports and tried all these different sporting activities and just never got into it. But luckily they put me in karate and martial arts, and I could feel that a lot more, probably because there was an emotional component alongside the physical component. So I took much more to that. If yoga had been more available in the 80s and early 90s in America, that would have been the number one thing I would have gravitated toward. But that happened later in life. And, you know, I've always been drawn to like Gothic culture and poetry and art and the arts in general, and have always, especially as a male, taken a different path and have different perspectives than the majority. And I now see that as a virtue.
And how did you get attracted to neo-paganism and the path that you took?
When I was, again, in high school, it seems like age 16 and 17 were like the turning points of my life, because that's when I discovered empathy and also discovered witchcraft, neo-paganism, Wicca, and I was lucky enough to have a few teachers who guided that part of the early journey. So what really drew me to that was the sense of self-empowerment that a person could get through those paths, and also because they're non-traditional. Really, anything traditional was unappealing to me at that point, and still is, pretty much.
Where did you grow up?
Right here where I am now, Missoula, Montana.
Now, was Missoula, Montana, or the state of Montana, a place that this type of training and teaching was available normally?
There were a couple of New Age shops at that time. I think it's funny that Montana has a population of 1.3 million people, and it's a huge state, whereas New York City, just the city, has like 28 million people. So because of that lesser population, there are some things that this state takes time to catch up on, such as alternative spiritualities. But this is the most liberal part of Montana, so I'm very blessed to have grown up here.
That's where the university is, right? The University of Montana's campus, main campus, is there. Is that correct?
Yep, it is.
Wonderful. Now, please tell us about your organization, Opus Ima Obscura, and how listeners who are interested in the OAO may find out more about it.
Currently, our website's under construction, but through my Facebook or my website, a person can navigate to the OAO Facebook for now, and eventually the website once it's up again. But if you look up Raven Digitalis online, you'll see links to both my website and to the Facebook. Or just typing in OAO Temple Missoula, or just Montana. But basically, we're a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We've been around for 17 years at this point, and we have a beautiful community here, a very diverse people. We practice multicultural paganism, which is to say we're not restricted to Wicca or any specific system, but observe the magic of many different cultures and people and practices. And we do this the best we can with the knowledge that we have and the connections that we have without appropriating cultures as much as possible. You know, we'll make sugar skulls, for example, as a community for a couple weeks in late October leading up to the Day of the Dead, which of course is a Mexican practice. And I'll get this amazing feedback from friends and book readers of mine in Mexico and Central America, just so happy that we're helping preserve some of those traditions. I'll get advice from swamis and from friends in India who help us perfect our Hindu observances the best that we can from our vantage point, or practices of voodoo and those related diasporic traditions. We'll get advice from elders and from books and teachers and other resources. So we really like to culturally educate at the same time as we culturally practice here.
Absolutely. I saw photos and a video tour, actually, of your temple and the diversity of the representative deities and the items in each of the four directions was absolutely beautiful, quite something special, something that I actually have never seen before because of that spiritual diversity that you present.
Yeah, thanks. And the video was from our old temple house, which we actually ran out of a duplex, a fairly small apartment in town. And at this point, we're located slightly outside of Missoula at a location that has 3 acres, and it's a proper house. And so the garage has been transformed into this gorgeous temple room with proper altars and deities and a place for everybody.
Wonderful. My guest is Raven Digitalis. We're talking about his new book, The Everyday Empath: Achieve Energetic Balance in Your Life. And we'll be back with more of Raven after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Tune in to The Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World, with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese. And guess what? Egg rolls showed up. Like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Raven Digitalis. We're talking about his new book, The Everyday Empath: Achieve Energetic Balance in Your Life. Raven, so many young people have been told you're too emotional or too sensitive, and they grow up feeling like there is something wrong with them. Is it your experience that many of them are empaths?
I think a lot of it is generational. Among younger generations, I think emotions are more acceptable, especially for men, much more than they ever have been in time, really. I think we're encouraged to feel what we're feeling in order to process our experiences and gain insights from other people. Growing up, of course, there's always the whole man up thing and boys don't cry kind of thing. But I really think that these ideas are starting to fade with time. And people are starting to understand that emotion isn't a bad thing, and it can actually be a very helpful thing.
What advice would you offer to parents of children who demonstrate empathic or even psychic abilities?
I think parents should do their best to nurture their kids' natural spirit and look for the signs objectively, rather than projecting one's own desires or expectations onto the kid. I think parents have the responsibility of seeing who that spirit is and getting to know that spirit, not as an extension of oneself, but as a sovereign being. And then the parental responsibility would be to help bring out those natural dispositions that a person might have, or natural inclinations, and help them grow within those boundaries rather than ones that have been created.
So you would advocate that parents nurture these gifts the same way they'd nurture someone who was artistically gifted or was gifted in mathematics or whatever it might be.
That's right.
100%. Now, is empathic ability something that runs in family lines?
It can be. I think it's one of those nature-nurture types of things. We do see a lot of brain disorders, for example, or other disorders carry over genetically. And we also see different qualities and characteristics that are positive carry over. So I think that's a big part of it. So much of it, I think, just depends on the environment. There can be a very empathic or psychic person who experiences terrible abuse and then instinctively shuts those things off or sees them as like a curse. And that has a huge effect, the nurture part. So if the nurture and the nature are in harmony, that's when a person can really grow.
So I guess the question I'm actually asking is, can anyone develop empathic ability?
You know, everybody's an empath deep inside. It's very rare that a person genuinely doesn't have empathy or experience empathy, and that's pathological, but that's actually exceedingly rare. Empathy is part of our biology, and it's part of our evolution. Even evolutionary science in modern times understands that empathy is a key to evolution, because a species has to cooperate and get along and understand each other in order to create and build success and perpetuate itself and grow. So empathy is part of who we all are. And also on a scientific level, on a physiological level, we have what are now called mirror neurons. So everybody has mirror neurons, meaning that we have the brain capacity that allows us to feel what others are feeling, to mirror them or mimic them, even if it's very briefly, so we can step into the reality of others. People who are highly empathic sometimes have trouble stepping out of that, whereas other people might go back and forth much easier. But empathy is within all of us. And the more empathetic a culture is, the more they'll evolve.
Talk more about that concept of mirror neurons. That's new to me.
Yeah, there are so many scientific studies these days about the neurological and physiological reality of empathy. There are even terms like emotional contagion or contagion. Emotional contagion means that a person catches the emotion of another, and that implies that a person just mirrors what another person is feeling or experiencing. And there seems to be a great divide between the metaphysical and the scientific physical studies of empathy. And I think it's essential to study both sides to really understand it.
Absolutely. Have these been done in blind studies where two people are in separate rooms so they can't see or have the normal senses to know what the other one is, how the other one is reacting and share the experience?
I'm not quite sure about that. That would be really neat to research. There's been a lot of animal studies that have been performed as well as human studies. Many with rats that have to do with sharing, studying how much a rat will share with another rat who has less, even if that means sacrificing one's own portion of food, for example. So there's many studies out there, and there's more every day. It's really astounding to see how quickly the empathic concept is spreading. And, you know, when I began 7 years ago researching for my first empathy book, which is called Esoteric Empathy, and that's more for pagans and witches and magicians, whereas the new one's more for everybody, the everyday empath. But back 7 years ago, or 8 years ago, when I started researching for that, there were very limited resources. And now I hop online and there's thousands of articles and books from every field of study, metaphysical and scientific, exploring the concept of empathy. So it's just really catching on.
Now, we've touched on some of these definitions, but how would you define an empath? And what are some of the traits of an empath?
Well, like I said, the term empath, kind of like psychic, is self-referential. And I call myself an empath because I know that I feel emotions to a much stronger, higher, deeper degree than the majority of people. And that's just doesn't make me better. That's just part of who I am. That's part of who a lot of listeners are. And right now, who are listening and who a lot of metaphysically inclined people are. I think we find a lot of draw to mysticism and spirituality among empaths and people with high emotional sensitivity. And we find people who are empaths just loving animals and children and anything that represents innocence and where we know we won't be harmed. Because there's a part of everybody that contains that innocent childlike self. It just gets clouded and shrouded with the ups and downs of life. And when we see beings who are more pure in themselves, it can be very comforting and remind us of who we really are. Empaths care about others. Not always. If they're wounded, they're really not going to care very much about other people. So it's not a constant, perpetual state. But it is much more than most people experience. One empathic concept that really stood out to me in the work of Carla McLaren in her empathic studies, as well as the work of Judith Orloff, is that empathy requires a compassionate response, meaning that empaths don't just feel what's around them and absorb it. They must respond with compassion. It's not enough to just feel something and take it on. That taking those things on is an experience of empathy, but to really process that empathy, we need to respond with compassion and care to others. So empaths have this care. Like I said, they're not always going to care about others, especially if they're wounded, but usually that care is
so
always there,
think,
through and through.
So based on what you're saying, you would think that empaths would be the ones who would be the healers, the nurturers, the social workers, those who'd care for other people.
Yeah, any of those fields of work are the best for empaths, anything that helps others. That's where we really feel our spirits fed, by helping others or helping make the world a better place in whatever way we're able to, small or large.
My guest this week is Raven Digitalis. He's the author of The Everyday Empath, Achieve Energetic Balance in Your Life. Raven, please share with our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
Yeah, The Everyday Empath is available wherever books are sold, or it can be ordered in. It can also be ordered from my website, ravendigitalis.com, where, of course, I'll sign a copy and put in a special present, maybe some incense or a tarot card. And, of course, from llewellyn.com, the publisher's website. You can also find it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all those places. I am really pleased that this book is my first one to be translated into the Spanish language. So that was really neat to learn lately. And it's also my first book to have become an audiobook. So if people prefer audiobooks, they can find that online on Amazon and through audible.com.
And you also offer tarot readings.
Oh, yeah. I do tarot consultations professionally, and those can be arranged through me personally. Again, ravendigitalis.com or facebook.com/ravendigitalis. And those usually last about an hour and really look into the past, present, and future of a person's situation. And my approach, of course, tends to be more empathetic. What can we do emotionally moving forward? And reading people's cards and giving advice like that is very fulfilling.
We'll be back with more of Raven and the Everyday Empath after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Looking for inspiration?
Want to be inspired?
Not sure where to go?
Find Mark and Kim every Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on Inspired Living.
Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual.
Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
Hi, everyone. Al Roker here. As a guy with his own catchphrase, I appreciate that after 75 years, Smokey's only said,
"Only you can prevent wildfires."
But I'm filling in because there's a lot more to report. Like when it's dry or windy. Be careful burning yard waste, because wildfires can even start in your neck of the woods. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the US Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt US Kids, and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Raven Digitalis. He's the author of The Everyday Empath, Achieve Energetic Balance in Your Life. You know, Raven, that's the same way there are different people, different types of psychics. They process things differently, be it by clairaudience, clairvoyance, clairsentience. Are there also different kinds of empaths?
When I first started studying empathy in the New Age field, like the super New Age field, I learned about crystal empaths, nature empaths, emotional empaths, psychic empaths, and all these things. And I realized, you know, I don't think those are real. I think there are people who might be more inclined toward nature-based healing, or people who are more inclined toward physical healing, acupuncture, Reiki, chiropractic work, more inclined toward the animal realm. But empathy is just emotional. That's it. It's purely emotional. So there's only one kind of empath, emotional empaths. And that's my perspective. I think the rest of it has to do more with a person's own inclinations and own talents and where a person is drawn. So I think it actually undervalues the power and the reality of empathy by using terms like crystal empath or cosmic empath, because then it starts to sound like this special thing that's divorced from reality, when in actuality we're all empaths and we're all developing empaths, and nobody should be left out of that. And it's okay to have different interests and different talents in other areas, but I don't think those should be confused with the experience of empathy itself, which is very much universal.
So someone might be psychic and empathic, but they're not mutually exclusive.
Yeah, generally I've discovered that if a person is more empathetic, they'll be a little less psychic. I know that's the case for me. Or if a person is more psychic, they may be less empathetic or have less empathetic experiences. Again, it all fluctuates. Nothing is, there's no hard and fast rules. And the reason for that variation between psychicism and empathy, and, you know, empathy can be called emotional psychicism and by some people, it is called that. But the reason for that divide is because psychicism relies on the mental plane, the cognitive plane of thoughts. And some people function very well through that cognitive plane and can catch things, can catch body language and external behaviors and energies in a different way than empaths do, because for empaths, it's strictly emotional. If we can learn to balance those two types of things, kind of like I do in my tarot readings, for example, and have some amount of distance and then have some amount of empathic engagement, then it can become very healthy. And really, that approach is being embraced by psychiatrists and psychologists and life coaches and people of those professions as well, because it is a key to success. We have to acknowledge and validate what another person is experiencing and even step into that a little bit ourselves in order to help that person find a way out of difficult circumstances or cope with or grow from what they're experiencing emotionally.
I'm going to share an experience that I had in my early 20s and ask for your take on this in terms of that combination of empathy and being psychic. In my early 20s, I was in the United States Air Force. I was stationed in Seoul, Korea. And one day I was sitting there and I said to myself, there's something wrong with mom. I didn't have any indication that there was any problem with my mother back in New York. And I said, something's wrong with mom. And I got on the phone and I called her. And she said, hello. And I said, mom, what's wrong? And my sister had picked up the extension phone simultaneously. And she said, oh, my God, how did he know? And what it turned out was she was going in for major surgery the next day. How would you define what that experience was?
Yeah, that's amazing. And that's one of those experiential things that I think a lot of people experience, but that science can't really quantify. And that's why there is that divide so often between the physical and the metaphysical in the West, not in every culture, but definitely here. I think what you experience there is psychic in that, boom, you sense that. But the reason you sense that is because of the empathic and emotional connection.
Sure.
So the empathy was like the springboard for that psychic bond, is how I would interpret that.
I agree 100%. What are the ups and downs of being an empath?
Oh, where does one begin? Because we're always going up and down. I could tell you about my empathic ups and downs that I've had today.
please do.
Or yesterday.
Like, please do.
You know, the mind is such a unique thing. There's so much to how we process and how quickly we process our reality. And we're different from other animals. We're different from trees and plants. Humans are such a strange, unique creature. I personally believe that we're half, quote, animal and half, quote, extraterrestrial. And I don't think that's that crazy of a theory. But regardless, humans are very strange machines. And so we process loads of information at a very fast pace. And because there's so much to process, we learn and we train our brains and our consciousness in different ways to process our experience. And I do think that's why the law of attraction has a lot of merit and does follow a lot of ancient hermetic and magical principles as well, because we do co-create our reality. We can't project it all onto our thoughts, but we certainly co-create. And for an empath, there's so much happening all at once, especially if we're in a fast-paced environment where we might not understand where one emotion comes from and where that begins and ours ends. And that's why empaths really need to work on clearing external energy and having times of solitude, not perpetual solitude. That's just as dangerous as perpetual socialism, or not socialism, social interaction.
I think that's a great question. How do we avoid energetic confusion? In other words, mistaking someone else's emotions and energy for our own?
I think we need to form a daily practice. I really emphasize the importance of daily practice for spiritual people, and especially for empaths. Because if we can take that time for ourselves in connecting to the divine, however we see the divine, connecting to ourselves, having moments of calm, of yoga, of meditation, of walking in nature, whatever our daily practice might be, then we can more accurately interact with other people from a place that's more grounded in ourselves. There's many techniques in metaphysical traditions, different stones and herbs that a person can wear or utilize to help draw those boundaries, and different tools that can help. In my empathy books, I talk about other things like eye contact and how much eye contact a person shares, because that's a big part of the empathic exchange. I know it sounds selfish, but we have to put ourselves first. And like the old adage goes, the healer must heal themselves first. And this personal care that we give to ourselves becomes then generated to other people. We can serve others once our needs are met. And from that place, we can more easily determine those boundaries of emotion.
Is that something that's not common, but something that you find manifests in empaths who really haven't had that mindfulness training and learned the daily routines and exercises, is that there seems to be a great deal of misunderstanding about self-worth and self-value, and often putting other people ahead of ourselves?
I think it's very easy to care about other people first, because then we don't have to really look at ourselves as much. In America, there's so much free form. In other cultures, there's so much more tradition, and whether that's cultural or spiritual or what. But we have so much freedom in many ways that sometimes that can even become a hindrance, because we don't know what to do with ourselves, or where to project energy, or exactly how to connect with deeper energies and become a more complete person.
You had talked about shutting down before. Can empathy be switched on and off by using the mind?
I think sometimes when an empath gets overloaded, they will default into the opposite. The pendulum will swing in the other direction. I think a lot of people who pursue solitude and lives of just being away from society have gotten burned empathically. But there's always a balance. And that's the thing that I really like to stress in my books is find your balance, find your balance. Because it's easy to get connected to those negative experiences because we're all going to have them. And it's very easy for empaths to see empathy as a curse because of those difficult times, which is why we need to focus on the benefits of empathy and the good that it does in the world. And the more we focus on those positive things, the more those things will grow.
Absolutely. My guest is Raven Digitalis. He's the author of The Everyday Empath, Achieve Energetic Balance in Your Life, which is exactly what we're talking about. And we'll be back with more of Raven after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, and, of course, companionship. Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive, and now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance will come in with this group.
But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Good morning, Uglyville!
Every ugly doll is unique.
I'm Moxie.
Bobbo.
Wade.
Those close to me call me Slick Doll.
Which is not his name.
And every child is, too.
They can be pretty lovable.
That's why when you travel, you should make sure your child is in the right seat for their age and size.
That sounds pretty great to me.
Keep them safe by visiting nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Isn't that right, gibberish cat?
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Raven Digitalis, the author of The Everyday Empath, Achieve Energetic Balance in Your Life. Raven, many of us have experienced meeting someone for the first time at a business or a social gathering, having a conversation with them, and feeling absolutely exhausted. What's the significance of this?
You know, empaths care so much about others that a lot of people of all types will navigate to empathic people naturally. And that's a trait where a person can understand that they are indeed an empath. They can talk to anybody. They can understand anybody's realities and experience and actually care about it. And so will attract all different types of people. And to the untrained empath, they can attract narcissists and energy vampires, which is not to criticize other people, but is to say, you know, if a person's disposition is to drain others or take advantage of others, empaths are very easy targets because We often expect everybody to be the same as we are. And, oh, they would never do that. They'd never be dishonest, or they'd never try to use me. Because I could never use anybody, why would they? It's just wrong. And, you know, not everybody shares the same values. And, damn, I've learned that so many times. And empaths have to choose the people they surround themselves with utmost precision. It's vital, because everybody forms our reality, and then we echo that out ourselves into other people's reality. I believe that empaths are meant to positively affect the world and have good change in their lives and affect that in other people's lives. And so much of that depends on our social interactions and who we allow into our spheres. So again, this is why taking some personal time for reflection is very important. I've known a number of empaths who will just go with the flow. Water is our element. God, I love the bath. I'm going to have a bath tonight. But water water is the empath's element. And so we flow and we flow. So I've seen so many empaths just flow into everybody else's experiences and reality, and just so fascinated by other people that they don't even know who they are themselves at the end of the day when they're alone. They just know other people's experiences and realities. And that can be a huge challenge in self-development. So empaths need to know themselves and who they are as a person. So many different cultures teach that the ego is bad. Well, not so many, but sometimes we hear, you know, ego is bad. But in reality, the I identity is important, because that we have it for a reason.
We seem to be living in a world where there are more and more narcissists in daily life. How do we protect ourselves from them?
There's so much emphasis on physical things and having things, and that's equated to success, when we both know that that's not what real success looks like. That's a form of success. But I think this emphasis on stuff and having and power creates narcissism and brings that out in people. And empaths can protect themselves from that by just looking for the signs and spotting that behavior, seeing if somebody only talks about themselves when they're talking, or if they have reciprocation in their conversations. For uncontrolled empaths, if they're hanging around someone who's only talking about themselves, and the empath is not providing a spiritual service, and this person is just sucking up their energy, sometimes the empath won't even notice until afterward, because they just care about the person and they feel happy that the person gets to express themselves and process these things, which has some virtue. But in reality, every relationship needs some kind of reciprocation. It has to be reciprocal emotionally or supportively. And by looking for the signs, by meditating on our interactions every day, we can start to see those signs better.
How can empaths prevent themselves from being overcome by the out-of-control emotions of others?
You know, I work with developmentally disabled individuals as one of my many occupations. And so I work in a group home, and sometimes those emotions will go out of control and take a long time to be talked down. Empaths, I think, can acknowledge what another person is feeling, validate those things as legitimate and genuine, and simply transmit, like, okay, I understand you're feeling this. You have the right to feel this. However, there's also this other component of perspective. So that's that two-step approach. Empathically acknowledging, but then stepping back a little bit more objectively. If an uncontrolled empath doesn't step back, they'll just agree with everything that a person is saying. And that's no help to anybody. That doesn't really help that other person. But empaths can take a little step back, and then that vantage point can be very helpful, because it not only confirms and affirms the other person's experience, but adds a little bit of perspective into it.
How are empaths affected by the cycles of nature?
I think we're very sensitive to emotional energy and just environmental energy. So there's this exuberance in spring and summer, and then this kind of withdrawal in autumn and winter. So we naturally, and I think that's true for a lot of sensitive people, just naturally experience those cycles, sometimes without even realizing it. I would say that the moon and the lunar cycles are very tied to the empath as well, because the moon has always represented the internal, both spiritually and in astrology, and, you know, just cosmically, the moon is the satellite and is the lesser, the internal reflection, which is why I think empaths often thrive at night, because it's a lot more quiet. So by looking at the seasons, we can, and the weather, the daily weather, we can see how that affects us as well, because we're very sensitive and we can kind of tailor our days based on that, those factors.
What about the relationship between empaths and animals?
Like I said, animals have a certain innocence about them. Every single animal just is a reflection, an embodiment of nature, of the natural world, and we can learn so much from them. A lot of empaths are vegetarian or vegan, or like me, only will consume meat or dairy that is sourced humanely from animals who had very good lives. My friends in India don't quite understand that, because they're like, oh, you know, veg or non-veg, meat is meat. I'm like, no, it's not. Not all meat is created equal. I think empaths need to research the horror of factory farming, factory industrial animal raising, as opposed to natural, organic, local, free-range, kind, respectful animal raising. And we have to choose our diets and the industries we support very carefully, because every dollar we spend is like a vote. And everything we consume, whether it's food or socially, becomes absorbed in our energy, in our experience, in our consciousness.
And what can empaths who are growing in their ability learn from animal companions?
Well, therapy animals are a real thing. I don't know who I'd be without my kitty cats, and having that time to just snuggle them and feel that innocent love and care. And I think empaths really thrive and kind of are able to come back to that part of themselves through animal companionship. I wouldn't say as much through like reptiles or tarantulas or chickens or animals like that, but cats and dogs and horses and many other creatures have a certain emotional capacity and an ability to provide comfort that is, again, reciprocated. The empath cares for them and they care for the empath.
Is being empathic contradictory to one's spiritual practice, or does it enhance one's faith?
I think empathy and spirituality are so deeply intertwined that they're inseparable. In a lot of mystical traditions, whether it's Sufism or Kabbalah or Shakta of Hinduism or Christian mysticism, doesn't matter, shamanic mysticism, indigenous mysticism, we see this need for empathy. We have to empathically connect to the divine in whatever form it is, so we can feel the story of the deities, or just feel the immense magic of the cosmos and of just being alive. So empathy, emotionalizing the spirit, I believe, is what perpetuates real positive and love-based spirituality, no matter who the person or culture or practice.
What would you like readers to take away from The Everyday Empath?
You know, my goal in life is just to help other people and help make the world a better place somehow. Obviously, I'm a Leo. I have an ego. But
no.
At the end of the day, you don't say. Yeah, at the end of the day, I just really want to help other people. And I also say, when I'm not in a good state, and I'm not feeling much care for others, I have to go internal, and I advise others to do that as well. But as a takeaway from the material, I just want people to learn how to empower themselves in their own experiences and help create their own positive ripple effect in the world.
Wonderful. Raven Digitalis, my special guest. His book is The Everyday Empath: Achieve Energetic Balance in Your Life. Raven, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
Yeah, folks can get my book anywhere. And again, it's available in audio book format and soon to be a Spanish translation. And it's worldwide. And you can get it from me autographed and with special gifts if you go to ravendigitalis.com. And you can also learn about tarot reading and consultation services through that website as well. And I would love to talk to anybody.
Raven, thanks so much for being with us and sharing this wonderful work that you do. And let's not wait four more years until we talk again, okay?
Yeah, well, I love being on your show, and I really appreciate the work that you do. I think it helps a lot of folks and provides crazy, wonderful perspectives into the nuances of this crazy reality we find ourselves in. So thank you for your good work, and many blessings to all the listeners. You're all amazing.
Thank you, my friend. And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.
Namaste.